Todd Lafferty because it was no table won twice, did they? Woo, Todd, you're good. You are good. All right. Hey, I want you to open. You've got a handout with you called Introducing Change. Introducing Change and Living to Tell About It. Change. Oh, my goodness. Change is a word that at times brings fear to our hearts and souls. And when you think about change, you realize that it is inevitable and sometimes it is hard. We know that change happens. You got to change your password, it seems like, all the time. Sometimes you change your furniture, you change your organization charts, you change your schedules, your mobile phone gets updates, you got to make change on that. You used to write checks for stuff, now they tell you to go paperless, go online, you got change there. It's just change all around us. But in the businesses that we work in and that we lead in, there are times when we need to implement change. And I love the old story of when I was growing up, when you'd wear a tie, you had two options of tie tacks. One was the clip kind of went right through here and held your tie. And the other, do you remember it? It was a tie tack. And you just push it in there, stick it there. And there was an owner of a production company who, on a person's annual, on their anniversary, special anniversary, he would bring everybody down to the production floor and have a silver tie tack with the company logo in there and put it in a velvet box and would present it to him. It was a big deal. And so sure enough, he did that. And he had this young guy come up and he says, "Hey, thank you for your years of service." And he handed it to him and he opened up the velvet box and says, "Man, this is cool." And he took it out, put it in his ear. And so... That's when you realize times have changed over here. Change is happening over here. We know that it's inevitable. And the businesses that are great today are on the edge of what is tomorrow. Businesses that are great today are on the edge of what is great tomorrow. And so change is inevitable. Either you'll be the person that changes or you're going to resist it and just talk about it. And there's that statement that you've heard tons of times. It's on the front of your handout. If I always do what I've always done, I'll always get what I've got. So we need to change. So audience of participation, it's just like a lightning round over here. Why do people resist change? Why do people resist change? First thought, what's your first thought? Why do we resist change? Fear. You're comfortable with status quo. Don't understand it. Lazy. What? Pain. It's painful. Anything else? One more and we're done. Let's close in prayer. That was perfect on that. Does that not make sense? Every one of those things that we say to. Fear of the unknown. Get me out of my comfort zone. Disrupting my routine. Fear of failure. Satisfied with status quo. I lose my position and my power and my control. And sometimes it means additional commitments. All of these things. And we just begin to bristle against change. And in the church, when I first was going into the ministry, I had someone put their arm around me and said, "You know, the last seven words of the church are this: we've never done it that way before." And that is so true, because when something comes up, you say, "Hey, we've never done it that way before." And as a pastor, whenever you step into like a new place, you'll definitely hear that a lot. We've just never done it that way before. And then there was that joke that they would always tell us, how many people does it take to change a light bulb? It takes four. One to change the bulb, three to stand around and reminisce about how great the old bulb was. And there is a lot of truth to that because we just don't like change. Now, look at the statement that you've got to fill in the blanks. People change when? People change when they hurt enough that they have to change, when they learn enough that they want to change, or they receive enough that they're able to change. And the leader must recognize when people are in one of these three stages: hurt enough to where they have to change, they learn enough to where they want to change, and they receive enough that they're able to change. So I want to talk to you about being that change agent. And if you want to introduce change into your business, into the organization that you're leading, how do you do that? I want to give you 10 things that I think are so important to be able to effectively leave change and be able to tell about it when it's over, okay? Number one is develop a trust with people. When people believe in the leader and the leader believes in the people, then trust is the result. As a leader, you don't treat your people just as another inventory item that they're here today, gone tomorrow, shuffle them around here. You don't treat them like goods on a shelf. You build trust, and so you build trust with your people, then your people build trust with you. Warren Bennis says, trust is the emotional glue that binds followers and leaders together. To be a change agent and to be able to survive, there has to be a trust between you and your people, okay? Because they've got to trust that you're doing what's right for them and the organization. Number two, if you want to implement change, you need to share your vision. Share your vision. Now, when you share your vision, there are five things right here that just, you know, I want you to write them down, and I'm going to summarize them all together. Number one, when you share your vision, you share where you see the organization going. Where you see the organization going. Number two is create a sense of destiny. Create a sense of destiny. Excuse me. Number two is appeal to the best in people. I'm sorry. Appeal to the best in people. And then number three is to create a sense of destiny. Create a discontent for the status quo. And then build morale. We can do this. Build morale. We can do this. Look at your five. Look at those five real quick. It talks about see where the organization is going, bring out the best of people, create a sense of destiny, a discontent from the status quo, and build morale. Picture this. If you're trying to implement change, first thing you do is you need to share your vision to say, this is where we are and this is where we want to go. And this is the vision that I have for our particular organization is that we get to this point right here. And when we get to this point, it's going to be best for us, best for our customers, and it's a great thing for us to do. And we're going to be thankful that we did this. And it is like your destiny, okay? Make it exciting to say, when it's all said and done, you will be able to say, we went from here to over here and the changes that it made. That is good. But now in order for us to get here, you know what you've got to do? Right here, right now, where we are, you got to get discontented with where we are. Let me tell you why we don't need to stay where we are. And you create that discontent for the status quo because if we just stay here, folks, we're not gonna make it. We're not gonna thrive. We're just barely gonna survive. We've got to make this move over here. And then once you've done that, then you begin to build the morale and say, we can do this. Okay? We can do this. All right. I love that the movie The Preacher was it Preacher's Wife? Preacher's Wife, Whitney Houston. In that movie, and whenever it comes on, it seems like I'll watch a part of it, and when I watch it, I watch it when her husband's preaching on that Sunday morning, and he ends up not getting ready to sell the church, but to bring hope that they can make this live again. I just get jacked up every time I hear that, and I could almost quote him verbatim on that, but when he begins to share this, and with the people sitting out there who they thought their church was hopeless where they were located downtown, and that they were just getting ready to give up and have to cave in, then the more he talked, you could begin to see more of the hope, and then the last he says, we can do this together, and everybody's all fired up on that, and he just pretty well painted this picture for them. And that's what you want to do. You want to share this vision for and then build up the morale and say, we can do this, all right? Number three is this, dialogue with your people. Dialogue with your people. That means get their input. If people have had a hand in making the change, they will accept it more readily. They need to know that they have a voice in the change. Don't just spring something on them and say, hey, we're getting ready to go do this and this. Spend time with your people. Don't surprise them with change. Begin to talk about it. This is where we want to go. This is what it looks like it'll do. Give me your input. When I became pastor over here, one of the things I did, it took my first year, and when I started my second year, we pulled the team together, and we began to look at our facilities. And we sort of had disjointed facilities, and there was never a master plan. So we said, we need to put together a master plan to tie all the facilities together and see what new facilities we need to build. It took us 3 years of input. 3 years we talked to people and listened to people and did this and changed that and did this and that until we came up with our final look of our master plan. And then our people bought on into it because they'd had a voice into it. And so when people get a voice into it, you dialogue with your people, it makes it a lot easier for them to do the change. Number four, solicit the support of influencers. Solicit the support of influencers. In every organization, you have got influencers. Those are the people that are respected by others in the organization, and they look to them. Take whatever size organization you've got, and you always identify who are the people that have the most influence. They usually have a lot of buy-in. They're excited about what's going on, but yeah, they're also the ones that have the ears of the people. And so you need to start with your influencers first and solicit their support. Sit down with them and say, this is where I'm wanting to go. You know another reason why you sit down with them? They may tell you that's not the right way to go. Because they may be the ones that say, I've got a pretty good hand on the pulse over here, and I'm not certain if that's where we need to go. Okay, maybe I need to step back. Let's think about that. Let's talk about that. And let's get their support first. And once you get the influencers on board with you, then that's when you begin to move forward. Influencers. I remember when I was teaching sales training at the telephone company, and we were teaching our folks how to come into a company and begin to make your presentation. You always want to try to get to the decision maker. And we talk to them. You need to identify who are the influencers there. Who are the people that make decisions? Not just the decision. You know the decision maker, but who are the influencers in the organization? And it was so interesting. This is back in the old days when we would sell these PBX machine systems. You know, you'd have your receptionist at the front, and she'd be answering the phones, and then we'd design different telephone systems for the whole company there. And too often, when we would talk to people, they made a huge mistake at the first. And the huge mistake was at the first is they would call, and the receptionist would block them from talking to the decision maker. And so what they did was they found a way to get around her. And they went around her and somehow got to that decision maker. And we said, nay, nay. Nay, nay. And we told, it was a true story of a guy who'd gotten around the receptionist, got into the decision maker, made his whole pitch. And the decision maker, the leader of this company, said, okay, before I make a decision, let me make a call. Alice, can you come in here, please? They bring in the receptionist. And she came in there, and he said, what do you think about this system? What do you think she said? Thumbs down. And and so he was deep six right there. And you know, when you step on someone like that, you've made a huge mistake. You need to understand who the influencers are. So that's why we would tell them, you better be on good terms with the receptionist, because she's really the one that's using the system more than anyone else. And you want to make sure that she agrees with it and likes the product that you have. You look at your own organization. There are influencers in every organization, and you want to talk to them and solicit their support. We just this past Sunday, we had a deacon ordination, and whenever someone comes on as a deacon, I give them the story about two buckets, and it's the same way with key influencers. Key influencers or leaders in your organization carry two buckets, a bucket of water and a bucket of gasoline. And what happens is when these little yang-yang situations happen in your business and somebody's a little upset on something, there's a little bit of a brush fire here, influencers or leaders are usually the first ones on the scene, and it comes to their attention. And they've got their two buckets. And they can either pour water on it and say, whoa, 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 let's talk about this and get it resolved and pour water and then we're fine. Or they can take gasoline and they can pour it on it and it becomes a California wildfire. And all of a sudden, you've got all this dissension going on in your office and in your business because somebody poured gasoline on there. So as influencers, you want to solicit their support so that when others are talking about the change, the influencer can walk over with a bucket of water and say, let me explain what that change means, and kind of put a little bit of water on that, and you keep the process going. Okay? Does that make sense with you? All right. Water and gasoline. Everybody's got one. Number five, check the change in your pockets. Check the change in your pockets. Every leader is given a certain amount of change, okay? Sometimes people use the phrase chips. Everybody's got chips in their pocket. Chips makes you think of poker chips, so as a pastor, I need to go with change, okay? You got that? All right. So we'll go with change in your pocket. That means it's like the emotional support that you get from people, because as you've been here for a while, then people have trusted you more, and you get some change in your pocket, all right? And it takes change to make change. You need to have some change to make change. Here's the statement. The more change in the pocket of the leader, the more changes that can be made in the lives of the people. The more change in the pocket of the leader, the more changes that can be made in the lives of the people. This is a warning to you. If you're wanting to rush out and do change, a big change too quick, you might get shot down, because people have to trust you and you have to have proven yourself. And every time you prove yourself, ching, ching, you get some change in your pocket. Then you do something else, you get some change in your pocket. And you want to hold on to that change, because there's going to come a day when you're going to ask for a big change. And when you ask that big change, you're going to have to take a lot of change out of your pocket to put it on the table. Or if you're the poker players, you got to take a lot of your chips and you're pushing them in on there and say, I'm cashing in my chips right here. And this is almost where you got to trust me. And they say, well, we've trusted you this, so we trust you on that. So have your change. There was a conference that I went to about 20 years ago. A guy made a great statement. It stayed with me forever. And it is, go slow, stay long. Go slow, stay long. Now, this is from a pastor. Some of your businesses may be different, where you got to maybe get the whip cracking faster. But if you go too fast in making change, you're going to run ahead of your people and you're going to lose your people. So take your time, get your people around you, get some change in your pocket, and then you're able to make those other changes. All right? You with me so far? All right. You got to check your change. Every time you're getting ready to recommend any kind of change, you want to check the change you got in your pocket and say, have I got enough change to be able to make this change? And if you don't have enough change to make that change, you better wait till you get more change. And when you get more change, then you can make that change. Okay? Good. All righty. Number six is this. Explain the why of change. Now, this is the key. This is the one that you circle. Explain the why of change. You never say, we're just going to change for change's sake. No, no. You better give us a why of change. Why are we changing? And your change should relate back to your mission statement or what you're trying to accomplish, and say, because our mission statement is this, we need to make this change in order to accomplish that. Always explain the why of change, and then people will better buy into it and understand it. When I was at the telephone company, they were a competition came in before the telephone company just had a monopoly, and then all of a sudden the competition came, and we had to change the way that we were selling. In the old days of the phone company, it was great when you're a monopoly. You kind of walk out there, you got one kind of phone, and say, this looks good for you. You want it? Well, you don't really have a choice, do you? Good. How many of you want to ride up on there? It was great. It was a great life. And then all of a sudden, they made us be competitive. And now you come out there and you dropped your one phone. They said, well, there's three others out here that look better and they're cheaper. So now we got to learn how to sell different. So we came up with this new course, and it was called Account Executive Selling Strategies. And so AESS. And so myself and another guy were the pilot teachers of this class. We were the first ones to ever teach it in South Central Bell in the five-state region. And so we had some old crusty veterans coming in there, and they didn't want to learn how to sell that way. That's not the way I'd do it. You'd walk in there and tell them, this is what we're going to get you. I said, nah, I ain't going to work anymore. And what you had to do is, whenever you were teaching that class, you had to start off by explaining the why. Let me tell you why we're doing this. And you would constantly communicate that so they would be willing to change the way they were interacting with their customers. So you explain the why. And when you explain the why of change, then you're sitting on the same level with people. And they're either going to say, I disagree with it because I don't think that's why we need to do it. Okay, that's fine. Maybe we'll disagree with that. But at least we got all the facts on the table and you understand the why of it. And there will be others that will say, I want to rely on for this, but now this makes sense. I understand the why. Let's move forward on that. Always explain the why. Number seven, test market new ideas. Test market new ideas. I think some of the changes that you want to make, don't set it in stone. This is, and we've done this a bunch here at this church. And that is, hey, guys, let's try this, and we're going to try it, and we're going to try it for a season, and then we're going to evaluate it. And guess what? If it doesn't work, we'll change and go back to the way it used to be. Whether it's how we do in curriculum or whatever, our calendar, our planning, whatever, you sit there and test market the idea. So for many of you, if you're wanting to implement some change, I'm not talking about some huge thing that can't be reversed. I'm talking about just normal kind of change that you want to put in your operations. What you'd like to do is just kind of tell them it's going to be a test market. Let's try this for 6 months. Let's try it for a year. And then let's evaluate it. And then we come back and say, does it work or does it not? People always appreciate that if they say, okay, let's just test this out, and then we'll see if this thing's going to work or not. You move those things around. We start a new member class called Discover Shades, and I think, Chad, we started, was it 4 o'clock was when we had it? It was 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. We tried that for about a year or so, and our attendance wasn't as good. So then we said, well, what if we did it right after church and did it at 11 o'clock, put it right here in the fellowship hall? Well, attendance just about doubled. I mean, all of a sudden, it was a great change. But we said, let's just test it. Let's test doing this class. Tried it at 4. Tried it. Class makes sense. Time doesn't. Then let's shift it. Put it at 11. Works good. So think about test marketing those ideas. I learned all about change from my wife. And this Sunday, we're going to preach about change because we're getting ready to go to a major change from a facility standpoint with our church. And it'll disrupt our schedule for a while. And I'll probably be sacrificed out in the parking lot. No, therefore, we're going to do this. We got it. But I was not a change guy at all. I grew up where if you put a stick of furniture there, it stayed there really till your funeral. There wasn't any need to move that. If that sofa looked good there, it was utility. It seemed great. And that's a house I grew up in. Nothing changed. Nothing changed. From the moment we moved in the house, it was always the same. And then I married Janice, and she's an artist. And that's a little different on there, the way she sees things. And in her mind, we'll be sitting there, and I'll say, what are you thinking? I said, think about how I'm going to change the living room, you know, how I'm going to change the den and stuff. And our first few years of marriage was just crazy because I'd walk in. I'd say, whoa, what happened? She moves all this stuff. So she knew I'd get a little upset at times because I really want to change the guy. And her comment to me was this, so when are you going out of town again? And sure enough, I'd go out of town. I'd be gone a couple days. I came back. And you know what I learned in my married life? Turn the lights on when you walk in the house at night because I was killing myself. I'd come in at night from a late trip, and I didn't want to wake her up. And I'm tripping over furniture, knocking things over. I said, where did this come from? I moved it. And everything gets moved in our house. I mean, it won't stay very long. And so I learned the value of that. Over 40 years of marriage, you pretty well picked up on, hey, let's move this stuff around. But you know what she would do? She was so smart. She would say, let's just move this in this room, and we'll leave it here for a week or two, and then you let me know if you like it or not. Well, I am such a sucker. Because I said, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Well, you know me. Once it's set, after a week, that's the way it's supposed to be. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm saying, I'm liking this. This is great. Well, then 3 weeks later, she's moving it around again. And I'm going, I liked it that way. Oh, no, we got to shift it around over here. So you know what she was doing? She's test marketing the idea with me. And she let me know, Danny, if you really don't like this, you can find a reason why, then we'll move it back. And it was great. Okay. I knew it wasn't going to be permanent. And at our house, nothing's permanent. It'll always be moving. But test market these new ideas and let people know, hey, if it doesn't work, we'll shift it around. Number 8, don't take criticism personally. Don't take criticism personally. There are two types of people, pioneers and the homesteaders. Pioneers and homesteaders. The pioneers are the ones that always take the arrows. And if you're going to be a change agent, you're going to be the pioneer. And you're going to be going into new lands, and you're the one that takes the arrows, where the homesteaders just kind of settle in over here. And you just got to be willing to take the arrows. Don't take them personally. It's just people have a hard time changing. And you just begin to move in there. There are people who are turf shepherds that like to maintain their own little turf, build their own little silo. They don't want to see anything change. And you've got to disrupt that. And so you've got to take the arrows on that. But you just keep moving forward on that. And don't take the criticism personally. I love that story I met about the 100-year-old man. And as soon as he turned 100, they brought him up at church and interviewed him and said, 100 years old, so tell me. You've probably seen a lot. He said, yeah, I've seen a lot of changes in my life. I've been against every one of them. And so there are some people that are like that. So don't take criticism personally. Identify the legitimizers. Those are that when they talk, people listen. They're people you can trust. Get your honest opinions on that and listen to people, but don't take it personally. Number 9, continually remind people why you are making these changes. It's amazing that 2 of my 10 points deal with the why. That is, you want to constantly remind it. When you get in the middle of change and people are getting upset, keep reminding them, this is why we're doing. This is uncomfortable. Hang in there. This is why we do it. And number 10 is this, affirm and appreciate people for the changes that they do agree to make. Affirm and appreciate people for the changes that they do agree to make. Build them up and thank them. Man, I appreciate you. I appreciate you going this route and for accepting this change. In the end, it is important to remember that we cannot become what we need to be by remaining what we are. We cannot become what we need to be by remaining what we are. It's a fact, and that is that when you're through changing, you're through. The most successful organizations will do more than embrace change as a part of survival. The best organizations will thrive on change and improvement. We need to constantly be changing. And sometimes when you think about change and you think about just the culture we live in where everything seems to change, is there anything that is constant? Yes. And look at that verse at the bottom. The stability of the God that we serve. For the Lord is good. His love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations. We have a God that loves us and a God who is faithful to us, and that never changes. And with everything else that changes around our world, we always can have that one fixed point right there to know that our Heavenly Father, the one who created us, the one who sent his Son, Jesus Christ, to die on the cross for our sins, who raised him from the dead to give us the opportunity to have salvation and come into a right relationship with him, all of that, that same God, his love endures forever and his faithfulness continues through all generations. Hold on to that truth. And when we come into February, we look forward to having you to come back and be a part of it. All right. You guys have a great new year and have a great month. Thank you.